Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones here, Welcome back to the Daily Jungle. Nice show for you today. Hope you checked it out. Round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs are almost here. We had the captain of the Ducks, Ryan Getzlaff, in right before their matchup with Edmonton. The NFL draft starts Thursday, of course. The NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah broke it all down. And we ran down batting champ and four-time All-Star Houston Astro Jose Altuve. AP finally gets a job. Matt Bum wrecks a rented dirt bike. And you can go ahead and just give Golden State the Larry O'Brien. Alvy, get at it right now. Let me start with the NBA playoffs. No disrespect to any of the remaining teams, but we may as well just give the Larry O'Brien trophy to the Golden State Warriors right now because they have never been as dominant and as motivated as they are right now. And that beatdown they just laid on Portland shows that they're better now than they've ever been. You see, this is exactly what Golden State envisioned and what the rest of the NBA was tripping about when they added Kevin Durant. The team that you're seeing right now, this is why they were the heavy favorites, and everybody was so pissed when Durant joined forces with Steph and Klay and Draymond. Because everybody knew this would happen and that there would be no beating them when it did happen. Because right now, they look unstoppable.
25-footer up and good. That's knocked down by Draymond. Screen by Zaza. Klay's open. Fires away. Three ball. Klay Thompson. Curry flips to Durant. Cutting back door. Easy dunk for KD. And the Warriors have a 2-touchdown lead. Grabbed by Harkless. Goes behind the back. Goes up. Blocked by Durant from behind. He ran him down and swatted the ball away. Curry left side from Thompson.
Man's game.
Three ball good. Curry off a down screen. Another three for Steph.
Man's game.
Is good. And it's 35-9.
Warriors radio. And not only is that the best they've ever looked, but they just dropped 45 on Portland in the first quarter. 45 on the way to that curb stomping. And again, they did so with Kevin Durant playing limited minutes in his first game back. They did so without Steve Kerr, without Sean Livingston, without Matt Barnes. So as dominant as they were in sweeping Portland, they're just going to get better. It's a team that's peaking at the right time and not looking for some switch that may or may not exist. You know, like the Cavaliers. I mean, they're unstoppable. I mean, who's going to beat Golden State? Not only are they the most talented team in the NBA, they're the hungriest after blowing that 3-1 lead in the finals last year. And now they may have even more to play for if they don't get Steve Kerr back. So if you're the best, and you're the deepest, and you're the most motivated, you're not coming off the floor without that hardware. And that sweep just gives them even more time to rest and recover. I would never say cancel the postseason after just one round, but go ahead and cancel the postseason after one round. Because no one's going to beat these guys. You're not running them down. Who's going to beat them? And they're going to get better. And not only are they better than they've been, but they're more motivated than they've been. They do look unstoppable. 1-800-636-8686. And wasn't that the nightmare and the thing that everybody was so mad about? That team with Kevin Durant. And he's going to get better with more minutes. Question is Steve Kerr going to be back or not? You know, I would have said that losing Steve Kerr, and they might, would be a pretty big blow. I mean, I get that they're as professional as they are, they're as deep as they are, they're as proud as they are, but I don't think you want to underestimate what this guy means to that franchise. I mean, you might normally ask the question, realistically, how many wins a year is an NBA coach worth? But I'm looking at Steve Kerr, and I'm looking at the way he leads, the way he coaches, the way he motivates, the way he put that culture in place. This is not a guy that just rolls the basketball out there. Then again, look at how well they're playing without him. And in a sense, they might be playing for him. You've got the next guy up, who's Mike Brown. Mike Brown's been a head coach. Mike Brown's had success as a head coach. But even Mike Brown could not believe the way Golden State showed up in that first quarter last night.
It was unbelievable. Our guys were locked in on both ends of the floor. And I wish I can say, you know, this one thing or that one thing was really good. But everything that we tried to do, we tried to do it at a high level, and it worked. Our guys, give them a lot of credit for coming in with the focus that they did. It was fun to watch, fun to be a part of.
Mike Brown, the key to me is what he said. They're locked in on both ends of the floor. You know what you're going to get offensively from Golden State, but they still don't get nearly the credit they deserve defensively. They did a great job defensively. Draymond Green is out there defending like a beast. Best defensive player in the NBA. And if he's going to be defending the way he is, and at the same time knocking down five threes, man, forget it. You're not beating these guys. 1-800-636-8686. But don't blame that on Damian Lillard. Man, he played lights out, gave it everything he had, and then afterwards talked about we need to be obsessed with these guys. We now know, if we didn't already, that to get where we want to go, we have to go through them. That's the gold standard. That's where the bar is. So it's time to go back to work. Dame's got a lot of heart and a lot of pride, and he just knows that if they're going to get to where they need to go, they're going to have to find a way to get through these guys.
I'm proud of what we showed in the regular season and gave ourselves a chance, but, you know, looking at the way this first round went, you know, I think it's obvious that we need to go back and get better individually and come back ready next year and put it together better as a group. You know, because you never want to go out like we just did, and it's disappointing.
We're joined by Ducks captain Ryan Getzlaff. Ryan, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good, good to visit. Thanks so much. You finished off that sweep of the Flames last Wednesday, Ryan. How important was it to bury them and that series as quickly as possible, rather than let them hang around for another game or two?
Yeah, that's a big thing. Anytime you have the chance to put somebody behind you, you want to do it. And it was nice that our group was able to battle back in that game three and then obviously close it out in game four.
You've been here before, so I'm curious about the approach. I mean, the playoffs are such a grind, so you get the rest from the physical standpoint, but when you get a little bit of time off, do you try to unplug and clear your mind of hockey, or at this time of year, are you still locked in and thinking about hockey in the playoffs all the time?
No, you know what? It was nice. I mean, I had 2 days or 2.5 days where I was able to just, you know, reconnect with my family, be with them for a couple of days and not worry about hockey at all. And then it allows your mind to kind of relax, and then away you go.
Ryan Getzlaff joining us. All right, so if you could, take me back to game one of the series. You scored 52 seconds into the first period. You had an assist on the game-tying goal in the second period, and you had that hit on Mark Giordano in the third that brought the crowd to life. How pleased were you with that performance and how it set the tone for really the entire series?
Well, I thought it was good. I mean, you know, anytime you're going into the playoffs, going into a series, you want to be able to get off to a good start, and our group did that. I mean, we, right from the drop of the first puck, I thought we were ready to play, and that makes a big difference going forward. And especially in our building, you want to come out and make sure we respond to our crowd.
You know, as a team, you haven't lost a game in regulation in roughly a month and a half. So how do you explain that, and then how much confidence is this group playing with right now?
Well, you said it. I mean, that's how you gain confidence is winning. So everything else is kind of a side note. But I think that after, you know, that break we had, our team came back refocused and ready to play and understanding what we needed to accomplish. And our guys did a good job building towards this playoffs, and we've just been able to carry it on.
Ducks center Ryan Getzlaff joining us. They take on Edmonton tomorrow night. So you've got Edmonton, Ryan, you've got Connor McDavid starting tomorrow night. When you look at McDavid and his game, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Well, he's great. I mean, a great player. So we're going to have to, you know, pay attention to him and identify when he's on the ice and help slow him down. I mean, he's a guy that if he has space, he can make things happen and be creative. And it's our job to kind of, you know, get in his face and make sure that he doesn't have a lot of room out there.
Yeah. And speaking of getting into his face, Ryan Kessler is expected to spend a lot of time on the ice with McDavid, and he's got a bit of a rep for getting under the skin of his opponents. He says that that's not what he sets out to do, but if he plays a way that frustrates a certain opponent, that's their problem, not his. When you used to go up against him when he was in Vancouver, how frustrating was it to play against him, and how tough was he?
Well, he didn't do that stuff to me.
Nah, I'm right. No. I got you.
You know, Kessler's one of those guys, obviously, that guys don't like to play against. He's hard on you. He makes you earn every inch out there, and that's something that he takes pride in and enabled him to become the player he is today, I think.
Yeah, the thing is, they're far from a one-guy team, right? As good as he is and for all the attention he gets, Edmonton has got a lot more to offer in the way of presenting challenges. What do you make of the challenge that they present on the whole?
Well, that's the thing is we got to look at their group as a whole. You can't focus your thing on one guy because one guy's not going to win or lose the series for them. They got some guys that have stepped up and had some big games. So we're going to have to, you know, just outplay their whole team. I mean, that's the motto of the playoffs is you got to play better than the guy next to you. And We'll pay attention to those things as we go forward here.
Clones, I have to talk to you about Stamps.com. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Stamps.com makes it so easy. They'll send you a digital scale, automatically calculates exact postage. Stamps.com will even help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. There is no need to lease an expensive postage meter. I use Stamps.com because I love how easy it is. I love how convenient it is. I hate going to the post office. I no longer have to. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, type in Rome. Stamps.com, enter Rome. Stamps.com, never ever go to the post office again. That's Stamps.com. Now back to the Daily Jungle. Ryan Getzlaff joining us for a few more moments. You know, Ryan, you've got a lot of work to still do as a team, but right now, if you had to say, how does this Ducks team compare with some of the best Ducks teams that you've been on?
Well, it's definitely up there. I mean, with the ability we've had to build, I think that makes a huge difference when you're talking about going into the playoffs with what we've done in the second half. We've built and molded this team into where we want it to be, where we're responding the right way to every situation. And when we're not, we're able to kind of identify it and move on from it. So that's been a big thing for us. And when you're looking at a big group like that, that's how you want to be.
Now then, looking at this matchup, you were the best team in the NHL at faceoffs in the regular season. The Oilers, on the other hand, were last in the NHL in faceoff win percentage. So what's your mindset when it comes to a faceoff, and how important is it to dominate that this series?
It is. It's very important. When you talk, especially about special teams, when you can start with the puck, whether it be PK or power play, it makes a big difference. So those are things that we have to identify and use to our advantage, and those are certain areas where our group has taken a lot of pride in, and we've had some good centermen come in and able to push our whole group.
You know, one more thought since you mentioned the special teams. Game one in the last series featured a 5-on-3 power play for Calgary that you helped kill off late in the third period. Randy Carlyle said after the game that he feels like you never really get enough credit for the work that you do on defense. So what's your attitude and your approach to your defensive responsibilities?
It's much the same as my offensive approach. I take a lot of pride in it. And I've always said I want to be the guy that, whether we're up or down at the end of the game, the coach wants to put me on the ice. So you have to take pride in those areas and being able to stop certain situations. And because those are a lot of times just as big a plays, and you have to be able to identify that and help push the group that way.
So let's talk Mad Bum for a minute. Mad Bum goes all Mad Bum with it. He wrecks himself on a dirt bike on his off day, bruising his ribs and spraining his AC joint. Although it could have been worse, it's still bad. How bad, though, is anybody's guess? He said yesterday he didn't think there was any structural damage in the shoulder, but he would not say how long he thought he'd be out, or if he needed surgery or not, or when or even if he'll be back this season. So it's a bitter, bitter blow to the Giants, a team that was already struggling, already 7 games out. Tough enough to deal with the injuries that result from playing the game, even tougher when they happen as a result of some brain-dead decision. I mean, look, this guy is unbelievable. This guy's the ultimate horse and gamer and teammate. But that's a really, really dumb decision. No MLB-er should be riding a dirt bike in the middle of the season, much less a pitcher, much less that pitcher. However, I'll give him this. Unlike Jeff Kent, who pretty much did the same thing back in the day, Mad Bum did not make up some bullcrap story about how he fell off the back of his mini monster while he was washing it like Kent did. Kent lied about it. Mad Bum owned it.
I wish I had some kind of cool story for you that it was some kind of crazy wreck, but it really wasn't anything spectacular, just super unfortunate. But I was actually being pretty safe the whole time. It was just a freak deal happened that there at the end, but yeah, that's really it. Like I said, I wish I had some kind of good story to tell out of it, but I don't.
The story is that you rented a dirt bike and you laid it down on an off day and got hurt. That's the story. And not a very good one at that, but unlike Kent, He did own it. He apologized for it. Because unlike Kent, he knows the cover-up's always worse than the crime. Just like he knows never to go out in public rocking a porn stash. The thing is, it's a really horrible decision, and it puts the Giants in a really bad spot. But then again, this is essentially who this guy is and why he's so invaluable to them and why they all have that 2014 ring, because he thinks he's indestructible. And until he laid that rented dirt bike down, he pretty much was. I mean, didn't the guy pitch like every single inning of every single game of the 2014 postseason when they won it all? So if anyone can get away with doing something that dumb, it's this guy. Because it's almost impossible to quantify what he's meant to that franchise. Not only has he been the ultimate horse, he's grossly underpaid. I mean, I'm not even sure how this is possible. But in 2016, he was the Giants' lowest paid starting pitcher. Sure, he signed that deal, but he obviously outperformed that deal. Incredibly. It's a joke how underpaid this guy is. As an example, he's tied to that team through 2019 through options and is guaranteed only $12 million total between now and then. I mean, that's absolutely nothing for a pitcher of his caliber. Through the year 2019, Clayton Kershaw is going to make that in 2 months this season. So that was a really, really dumb thing to do. Buddy owned it. Nobody feels any worse about it than he does. And you know he'll never do it again. They just have to hope that their season isn't already over and that they get this guy back sooner than later and that when they do get him back, he's the same pitcher he's always been. But until they see him take the ball, they're probably going to be sweating that. Unfortunately, that's the most mad bum injury ever. This dude wasn't going to get hurt throwing 175 pitches in a game or pitching 500 innings in a season. It was going to be doing something like this. Laying down a dirt bike, chopping some wood, base jumping, heli skiing, log rolling, something. Something like that. It was not going to be throwing a baseball. Because that guy probably could throw 250 pitches in a game and nothing would happen. Like I said, in 2014, didn't he pitch every single inning of the entire postseason that year? Nothing happened. Except they won. In the meantime, Ford might want to pull that commercial if they haven't already, that they're running with him. Daniel Jeremiah is my guest. Daniel, always good to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you back. You're about 48 hours away from the start of the draft. You're in Philadelphia already, Daniel. So how are things going for you today? And then what are the next 2 days like leading up to the draft for you?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. Like your phone is just kind of blowing up from different teams trying to get information without offering information, which makes for a really interesting conversation.
Right.
But it's fun, man. I'll tell you what, Jim, I can't remember a draft. I started scouting in 03 in Baltimore, so I'm doing this for a few years now. I can't remember a draft where at the top, I mean, really 1 and 2, like we don't have anything locked in. It's just wide open right now.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us. So let's try and make some sense of this. You've got all eyes on Cleveland and their decision with the number one pick overall. I mean, is there any reason to think that they won't go with Myles Garrett on Thursday, or could they really go with Mitchell Trubisky at number one?
Well, I mean, I think it's still got to be a little bit up in the air. I mean, my caution would be to the Browns. Like, at this point in time, if you're still trying to talk yourself into the quarterback, it's not the right quarterback. You know what I mean? Like if you're going to go quarterback number one, you need to be rock solid, lockstep with everybody in the building and say, this is our guy. We're moving forward. And that doesn't appear to be the case. Now they might end up doing that, but man, to pass on Myles Garrett and what he already is, plus what he can become, it just seems like a lot sure bet than if they were to gamble on a quarterback at one.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us. Well, now then again, the Browns do have quite a history when it comes to picking a quarterback, and then they come back to pick again at number 12. If they keep that pick, is Trubisky the pick right there, or could they go in a different direction still yet?
Yeah, I think he would be for sure the pick if he got to them at 12, and if you're high on him enough to be debating taking him with the first pick, then you should be high enough on him to trade back up and just guarantee you get him. You know, there's a chance, I guess, the Jets could take him at 6. I don't think San Francisco will take him at 2. So that would mean you'd have to get up to 5 to the Titans. And the Titans currently, you know, they have 5 and 18 in the first round, but they don't have a second round pick. So I'm sure they would love to slide back.
Dan, do you think there's any way at all they could work a deal for Jimmy Garoppolo? Is there a deal to be made there?
It doesn't sound like it. I mean, look, Adam Schefter, when he puts it out there that this is not happening, like, doesn't leave any wiggle room about it at all. as dialed in as he is, you know, I take him at his word that's not going to happen. I think we're probably more likely to see something shake free with A.J. McCarron than we would with Garoppolo.
All right, so when you look at the quarterbacks that are available right now, Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, how much separation is there in your mind between these guys?
Not a ton. I have it Watson and Trubisky very close to each other. I actually have Deshaun Kizer ahead of Mahomes personally right there. And then you have Mahomes as like the ultimate wild card because he's just got so much raw talent. But he's a little ways away in terms of the developmental standpoint. But I ended up personally going with Deshaun Watson just because of, you know, you got a little bit longer track record there. I think the kid's incredibly poised. He's tough. He needs to improve some accuracy and decision-making, no doubt. But I think, you know, it sounds cheesy and totally cliche, but the guy's made of the right stuff. So you kind of just believe in the kid, and you got to continue to develop him as a passer. Trubisky, if you just watch this year, Jim, is the cleanest guy, you know, in terms of just accuracy, decision-making, all that stuff. But you got a limited body of work, and you know he's a little ways away as well.
Daniel Jeremiah is an NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at @MoveTheSticks. All right, so if that's what they do with the second pick, what about Fournette? Does he go number four to Jacksonville?
I think Fournette is the easy way to explain him is, I mean, I think he's 2, 4, 6, 8. You know, I think he could go any of those. You look at San Francisco as a possibility. You look at Jacksonville at 4, which to me is where I think he'll end up going. You've got the Jets who are, man, Jim, have you looked at that roster? Last night I was just kind of cleaning up some research, and I went back through and just pulled up that depth chart. That is gross. So they could use help everywhere.
Actually, Daniel, let me jump in. You had a great tweet yesterday with regards to that. Quote, just looked at the Jets too deep. Not good. Quote, end of quote. I mean, how bad is that roster, really?
I think it's the worst roster in the league, which to me, I know people are talking about them, you know, potentially taking a quarterback. My thing is, you know, those quarterbacks are going to be around in next year, we think. And from what I've seen, I think are going to be better than this year's crop. And I mean, I'd be shocked if the Jets aren't picking up there again. So why take an inferior player this year when you're going to be bad enough to get one of the better dudes next year?
Daniel Jeremiah joining us, Sam Darnold as an example. You know, you mentioned Christian McCaffrey. When you look at him, Daniel, what, in terms of especially his footwork and his cutting ability, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Yeah. I think he's pretty special, Jim. I mean, I look at him, and I was around, you know, Shady McCoy for 2 years when I worked with the Eagles. And Shady's a little more loose, a little more fluid than Christian. But Christian's every bit as quick. And Christian has that kind of weird spidey sense, that lateral vision to be able to field defenders and make them miss without having to square them up, which is a really, really unique trait. And then you get him out of the backfield, and there's no NFL linebackers are covering that dude on those option routes that he's going to run. I mean, he's going to be a nightmare for people. So I think he's a pretty special player. I think Carolina, he makes so much sense there. You know, Cam, I think, was, what, 52% passer last year? Now you're going to get 5 or 6 just layup completions to Christian McCaffrey every game. They got those big mountains on the outside and Kelvin Benjamin and Funchess. They need a Ferrari, and McCaffrey can hit some of those big plays.
Now, is there anybody else that really jumped out at you when you've been breaking down tape on guys that maybe were better or who look better than were expected?
I'll tell you what, man, the guy that's getting the most buzz and who the more you've watched him throughout the whole process, the more I'm just like, dude, I was too low on him to start with is Hassan Reddick from Temple. I mean, he is explosive. He's physical. He can really bend around the edge. I mean, it sounds sacrilegious, but if you just kind of close your eyes for a second, open it, and watch him bend around the edge, he's got a little bit of Von Miller to him. He's not Von Miller, but he's got a little something to him like that, and then he can play off the ball as well. So, and you talk about a kid, the guy walked on as a corner at Temple and developed into what he developed. So he's a self-made dude. He's the kind of guy you want.
Yeah, we had him on a few days ago. Not only that, but walked on at Temple and then changed positions after the season and learned a new position like in 3 days, right? And the guy interviews
yeah,
so
no big
well.
Deal. Yeah, he's a stud, man. He's easy.
Jose Altuve is my guest. Jose, it's so good to have you back on the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you for having me.
It is good to have you back. Thank you. Now you're coming off a game against Tampa where you went 3 for 5. You had a home run. You had a couple of runs scored. You've been swinging a hot bat the last couple of weeks. So did you make any changes at the plate, or do you feel good and know that it was just a matter of time before the hits started to come?
No, I feel really good since I started the season. You know, it's really, I believe in myself and I believe in my hitting coaches. I think I was doing the right thing, but I wasn't getting many hits in the beginning of the season. But I stayed with my plan. I didn't change anything. I just trusted them. And, you know, the hits start coming, and, you know, I'm really happy that I'm being able to help my team.
Jose Altuve joining us. So you knew the hits would come. You homered in the last couple of games, and last year you had a career-high 24 home runs. So are you starting to see yourself as something of a home run hitter? And do you go up to the plate looking for home runs, or are they just something that happen when you make good contact?
No, I think it's something that happens when I make good contact, and I don't consider myself a power hitter. I just try to go there and put the ball in play. I feel like if I get to first base, I can still second base and put myself in a scoring position for the guys behind me. You know, I think homers are just going to happen, and this game is about to score runs. And so everything you can do to help your team to score runs, especially with the staff that we have, it's gonna be important.
Jose Altuve joins us once again. Now, the team made a couple of key moves in the offseason. One of them was to sign Carlos Beltran. What was your reaction when you first found out that he was going to join the team?
No, it's always great when you guys have guys like Beltran, you know, guy that's been a lead for a while. He knows more than us, and you know, he's a guy that likes to talk about baseball. He's a leader. And for us, I think we had a talented team last couple of years, but to have Carlos and to add the leadership in the locker room, in the clubhouse, is very important for us.
You know, I ran down your resume at the very top of the interview, and you've accomplished so much at such a young age, but Carlos tells a story about how after his press conference, he met with you and Carlos Correa at a steakhouse. And he said there was some small talk, but then you turned to him and said, I need to get better. Again, you're coming off a season where you were the batting champ, you were a silver slugger, you were an all-star, you finished third in the MVP voting. So what gives you that feeling that you still need to get better?
I mean, I think it doesn't matter how good or not good your season was. There is always a room to get better, and I feel like there is some aspects in the game that I can get better, maybe base running, maybe, you know, whatever. And I think he's the right guy to help me, and that's what I asked him that question. And you know, like I said, he's always commitment to help you to get better, and that's what I like Carlos so much.
You know, on top of that, your manager, A.J. Hinch, had a different take. He said in spring training, quote, we need to start talking about Altuve as one of the best complete players in the game, not just a good hitter who gets hits, end quote. So how much pride do you take in being a complete player, somebody who can win a game with his glove, his base running, and his bat?
I know. I really appreciate the comment from AJ. You know, I feel like he's the right manager for this team. He let us go out there and play. And, you know, I just try to become a better player every single year. Like I say, it doesn't matter how good or how bad you play, it's always room to get better. And I think because of the team we have, they really deserve you to get better and to play hard every single day because they're doing the same thing for you.
Jose, when you and I spoke last season, we talked about your childhood and growing up in Venezuela. And then earlier this season, you played for Venezuela in the World Baseball Classic. So what was that experience like for you, and what did it mean to represent your country?
No, great experience, especially playing with Cabrera, with Carlos Gonzalez, Martin Prado, Felix Hernandez, Ender Inciarte, and you know, the whole team. You know, I really enjoyed my time playing with those guys. And, you know, we didn't make it to where we wanted, but it was a really good experience for me.
Now, in the past, you played soccer in the offseason. Do you still do that? And when you play soccer, what do you get out of that from a fitness standpoint?
Not really. I didn't play soccer this offseason. I was more like taking care of myself. I didn't go back to my country because I have, you know, things to do here. But, you know, I didn't do it this year, but I love playing soccer.
All right, last thought. Last year, the team struggled at the start of the year. This year, you won 9 of your last 11. You're in first place in the division. So how important was it to get off to a good start this season? And how do you like the way the team is playing right now?
Oh, no, I love the way we're playing. This is the team we are. And you know, the kids just being consistent. Stay at the level we are, and we have a lot of talent. And we're going to go out there and play hard every single day.
We go to Florida. Wayne in Florida. Good to have you, Wayne. How are you? Good morning.
Good, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you.
Hey, buddy. I just got to say, Steve Kerr, the fact that he's even sitting up, much less standing up with the situation he is, with this spinal fluid situation, I've had it three times. all the fluid is leaking out. So in your skull, there's nothing to prevent your brain from bouncing off the off of your skull back and forth. And it's the most excruciating headache I have ever experienced in my life.
I mean, Wayne, that sounds terrible. Are you still dealing with that right now?
Oh, no, no. It's thank God the patch worked every time that I've had to do it. They just, you know, squirt a little blood back there, and it covers. Mine was done through spinal taps. And his sounds like the surgeon really screwed him over, because it sounds like it's a pretty big rip or tear in his spinal column that's causing this leak.
So when you talk about the patch, you're talking about the blood patch. And was that effective? And was that effective for you?
Yeah, it worked.
Good.
I mean, the first time I was in an emergency room, and the doctor says, "Well, I'm just going to pull a little blood out of your arm and squirt it in the same area where they put the spinal tap." He squirted it in there. Jip, 2 hours later, I was in a bar. I mean, I was so pissed because, hey, why didn't they do this in the beginning? Well, there's a million and one shot that you'll get an infection. I'll take an infection over this headache.
Wayne, I mean this respectfully, but I'm going to keep moving because you're scaring the hell out of me. It sounds excruciating. That sounds terrible. Big Sky Trist tweets, quote, "The worst is when your spinal fluid backs up into your throat during a call." Signed, Wayne. Wayne didn't send me that tweet. Keep his name out your tweet. Rich in the 970 tweets, "Is Wayne calling from inside an iron lung? He sounds like he's not just knocking on death's door, but knocking it in with a hammer." At Luis in Palmdale tweets, "Did Wayne gargle some sand?" Gabe in the 604 tweets, "RIP Wayne in Florida." Wayne's fine. Wayne's healthy. Wayne's happy. I asked him how he was doing. He said, "Great. Now." All you killing him right now could never make a call that good. Trust me, he did better than any of you could. Let's go to Utah. Justin. Hey, Justin, what's going on? How are you?
Rome. Hello again. How's it going, bud?
Good. How about you?
Not bad, man. I like the Jazz by 5 tonight. I'm going to tell you why. I agree with what you're saying about the Clippers, but the problem is they're crybabies. Doc Rivers sets the tone for the whole team. I don't remember Mo Spates crying so much on the Warriors. Now he looks like he needs a pacifier. Every single play they cry about, every foul, every out of bounds. They're not getting back. They're not focused on the game. If you're not accountable for anything, it's all the refs' fault. How are you going to improve? Anyway, that's all I got, Rome. I'm out. Mic drop. Rack me, bud.
If you want to drop the mic, just go ahead and do it. Hey, Marcus, wake them all up, man. What's going on? Nice to have you.
Dave, thanks for the vine, Vance. Man, I'm just up here in the shadow of the 12 bag still hanging in. But, yo, great show so far. Wanted to go off topic just a little bit. We got a Clippers game tonight, and I don't know when the next time I'm going to have to burn on these guys. But, man, Rome, I've been a Clipper. I've been part of Clipper Nation for a minute, and I'm just totally done with Job City right now. I mean, Blake just quit on us in the last game with a toe injury. The first time I seen sniper fire on the toe on a landing. But then, on top of that, Doc Rivers has no control of that team. Both of those guys need to go. Doc hasn't done anything as a GM, and as far as his coaching skills go, the team has no chemistry, so we're going nowhere. We're dead in the water out here in the West. That's all I got right now. Unwar, Tuscan Toucan Sam out here as our mascot. War, bringing Clipper Daryl back to be the official mascot. Bring Clipper Daryl back. Great show. Keep pimping the box. I'm out.
All right, Marcus, see ya. Hookland Josh in Detroit. Let's take the phone call. Josh, you're on the air. What's up?
What's going on, Jim? Thanks for the vine.
And it's right all you, there Josh.
Right there is the difference between NHL player and NBA player. You got Big Jumbo Joe playing for the Sharks with a torn ACL. Then you got a guy takes the biscuit off the face, Columbus Blue Jacket player, gets sewn up, comes back on the ice and plays. I mean, I might as well, next time I stub my toe, maybe I should call my boss and say, "Hey, I can't go into work." Come on, Blake. Come on. You stubbed your toe or whatever you did. You got a toe injury. You gave the season up basically for the Clippers. And so that's the difference between NHL player and NBA player. And another thing, Jim, is I told AP to take any job on my previous phone call. I didn't mean take any job with the Saints. I mean, I was saying, yeah, go take any job, but with the Saints? I mean, the Lions have a better...
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Josh, it's not a very good call. John in Little Rock, Arkansas. Hey, John, what's cracking?
You got it wrong. Been a while. The phone I used to call on is gone. This is a new smartphone, so I hope it sounds better for everybody. Josh, your phone call came from under. Boom, Chupacabra, pause, that smell like thunder. Boom, 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 your phone call came from under. Boom, 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 Chupacabra, pause, you better let them go. Boom, 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 I was listening to the sports show today. Boom, 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 and I heard that flim, flop, flam Josh had to say. Boom, 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 boom. Boom, he thinks he's worth a golden ticket. Boom, boom, boom. But with that put us all to sleep call, you need to stick it. Boom, boom, boom. That's why I say your phone call came from under. Boom, 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 boom. Chupacabra balls that smell like thunder.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
KC in Los Angeles. KC, what's up? How are you?
Yo, it's crack-a-lacking Pimp in the Box.
What's up, my man? It's been a while. How are you?
It's all good in my neighborhood, man. Hey, look, dude, you know, Blake Griffin hurt again, right? How Clipper of him. You know, but I realize, Rome, it's not really the Clippers' fault. It's not Blake Griffin's fault at all. You know, first of all, the Clippers, man, they all whine like a bunch of two-year-olds with diaper rash. And Doc Rivers is the key, and he's the head whiner of the bunch. And then you look at the history of Blake Griffin on his injuries. Dude got injured in his first game as a Clipper, his rookie season, when he busted his kneecap and missed the whole season. He's had staph infection, hamstring injuries, calf injuries, and, of course, punching out the equipment guy. That's something that we all do. I mean, basically, dude is always hurt. I don't care how much talent he has. And Chris Paul even got injured last year when he was reaching for a ball, and his thumb got caught in a guy's trunks. If you look at the Clippers' history, they've always had this problem. Bill Walton signed with the Clippers when he was a man in Portland, a 7-year deal, and he missed 400 games. How about the fact that Danny Manning ripped up his knee when he was playing for the Clippers? Marcus Johnson, the greatest player in Los Angeles high school basketball history, comes back to play for the Clippers after being an all-star in Milwaukee, and he runs into Benoit Benjamin in practice and fractures his vertebrae. Then we had people like Norm Nixon get traded to the Clippers from the Lakers for Byron Scott. He ripped up his Achilles and didn't play for 2 years. And then, of course, Sean Livingston had the worst injury Dr. James Andrews said he'd ever seen in sports when dude ripped up his ACL, MCL, PCL, broke his kneecap. I mean, basically almost got his leg amputated. You've had him on your show many times and know the kind of guy that dude is and what he went through. The Clippers are cursed. It's the curse of Donald Sterling and Buffalo. Yeah, we know they were owned by that racist and bigot for over 30 years. Yeah, the guy who announced to the world that Magic Johnson had those caves. The Clippers always spit up on themselves. I don't care what the situation is. I don't care what happens. You know it's coming. You just don't know when. And I figured out it's the curse of Sterling and Buffalo.
I have to jump in because I've got Jose Altuve coming up in a few moments. I want to rack you. I do have to ask, though. You couldn't find a way to work Loy Vaught into that? No Michael Olowokandi references? Chris Kamen? Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate you, clones. Hit subscribe. Tell a friend. Trust the podcast. Then check back tomorrow for more of The Daily Jungle. We will see you then. We're out.
The Spinal Tap.